Captain Doug Buffone, a Chicago fixture for a decade and a half. Announcing his retirement in December, Buffone leaves the Chicago defense a legacy that includes dedication to team and a whatever-it-takes attitude.
Bears fans, this is Bears Ballroom Radio. I am Aldo Gandia, and that was the voice of NFL Films legend John Facenda, paying tribute to the man we are paying tribute to today, Doug Buffone. When Facenda is commemorating the career of an NFL player, you know that is something special. Doug Buffone played 14 seasons with the Bears. In seven of those seasons, he had over 100 tackles. Mind you that this was at the time the NFL had a 14-game schedule. He was defensive captain for eight seasons. His first two interceptions were off of future Hall of Famers Bart Starr and Johnny Unitas. After his retirement, Buffone excelled at being an entrepreneur, but is most remembered for his incomparable rants when he co-hosted a Bears post-game show with Ed Obradovich. Here's a portion of one of those rants.
Very difficult to score when your offense is on the bench. When your defense is out there giving up 70, 80, 70, 64-yard drives and taking up the time, you don't have the damn ball to do anything with it. And that's Lovie Smith's fault, too. He's calling those damn defenses. I'm not calling them. Ed's not calling them. He's calling them. And it's about time you start calling what the hell's going on out there. And this is not the first game. This happened in Detroit. This happened in Cincinnati. You tell me what's going on out there when that team can take a football and drive it down your throat. At least hold them to a field goal. This is moronic. We're going to get our whipped all the way down the line. I've had it. I have had it. I want somebody to get kicked in the and get out there and play. You're getting paid to play this game. And play it right. I don't mind you getting beat. I got my ass whipped many times. But I tell you, I took somebody down with me. And that's what I want to see. Not today. Not like this, what happened today. This defense sucks. You are a professional team. Act like one, for God's sakes.
Wow. Doug Buffone was just simply a Chicago treasure. Still is. We just don't have him around anymore as he passed away a little over 2 years ago at the age of 70. But we are fortunate to have with us today John Buffone, his nephew, who once did a radio spot with Doug. He'll tell us about that and much more. John, welcome to the show. First of all, tell our audience a little bit about yourself before we dive into the life and times of Doug Buffone.
Well, first of all, Otto, thank you for having me on. Right now, I'm a news reporter in South Central Pennsylvania, about 3 hours from my hometown. That's where my Uncle Doug and all the rest of our family grew up. I tried to be a jack of all trades in the media market. I started off in radio, and then I moved over to newspaper, working for the USA Today Network, and now I'm back on television. So it's been kind of a whirlwind career so far for me. And honestly, Uncle Doug had a big impact on that because and just listening to that rant, that's music to my ears because I hear that thing every time when I'm watching a Bears game in the last couple of years. I hear that rant in my head, and it's just something that's kind of ingrained in my brain. And when I got out of college, I didn't know what I was doing. I had a broadcasting degree, and basically, you know, the market's tough. So I got my first gig with a 1,000-watt AM radio station about 45 minutes away from Pittsburgh. And Uncle Doug was visiting one of his times in the summer where he comes to visit for a week or so. And he said, hey, I hear you got a radio gig. I said, yeah, you know, about a couple hundred people might be listening to it. I got about an hour to fill. And he said, well, how about I come on? And I'm like, what? And he said, yeah, why don't I come on? I'll show you the ropes, and maybe we'll get you some ratings, see what happens. I'll show you how to do a radio show. So this is the point where he's doing the Bears post-game show. He's doing daily radio spots. He's helping out with some NFL films things. And here he is calling into my show with probably about 15, 20 people maybe listening at a time, breaking down the NFL and giving it the same amount of effort and passion that you would hear on any other broadcast. So he showed me the ropes and how to really maintain a good broadcast, how to be entertaining and basically he said, if you're not passionate, you're not anything. And I think all Bears fans, whether you were a fan of him on the radio or a fan of him on the gridiron, knows that passion was basically his number one attribute.
On and off the field. And when you talk about how nice he was to you, that's how he was throughout Chicago with just about everybody he met, right? He was just a super swell person.
Oh, without a doubt. And, you know, when he came home, he wasn't big shot Uncle Doug who played for the Bears. I mean, he's one of seven, including my father. So there was a lot of brothers and sisters there. And when he came home, he was just Uncle Doug or Doug or Dougie. And he got ripped on just as much as anybody else did as far as the siblings go. He always came home for hunting camp, and he went on this drought of not getting a deer for about 10 years. So he was just the butt of every joke. He wasn't, you know, this iconic Chicago Bears linebacker. He was little Doug who hadn't gotten a deer in 10 years. So it was always interesting when until I was a little bit older, probably when I was about 10 or so, maybe a little younger than that, didn't realize he was a football player. I didn't realize that he was this big time guy. I didn't realize he was a big deal. I just remember he was Uncle Doug who lived in Chicago, and he came out and visited 3-4 times a year. And he was the guy that all of his brothers made fun of, and man, they got him a few good times. And it was great to see someone so centered, so not taking himself so seriously, because he genuinely cared about other people. He genuinely cared about his family, genuinely cared about people in Chicago and his hometown. And it was just an all-around normal guy who just happened to play in the NFL.
Now, I talked a little bit about his pro football career. Why don't we start there? I've done some research, and I actually saw him play a couple of games at Soldier Field. I started following the Bears back in 1968-69. I think the first full season that I started following them was that 1-13 season that was just probably the worst season in Chicago Bears history. But nonetheless, I fell in love with the team. Butkus was on the team. Buffon was on the team. But let's start even before that, because he was drafted out of the fourth round, correct me if I'm wrong, and out of Louisville, correct?
Correct, yeah, he was a Louisville Cardinal. And he before that, he played at our little high school, Shanok Valley High School, which, you know, graduates under 100 kids per year, sometimes under 70, 60 kids. It's a very, very small town that was reliant on the coal industry back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And they actually got two NFL players out of that high school. Back in the 50s, it was Bob Pellegrini with the Eagles, and then Uncle Doug, after he left Shanok Valley and went down to Louisville. You're talking about his playing career. He's a guy who was always honest with himself. He'd be talking to me about his playing career and say, John, honestly, if I had to rely on God-given talent, I couldn't catch a cold. So he was the kind of guy who, he said, I had to study the game religiously. I had to know where the ball was going to be before it was snapped, because if not, I couldn't rely on my physical attributes. And that's not to say that he didn't bust his butt trying to do that, because he was always, you know, going real hard in the off season because he knew he didn't have the God-given speed or strength or, you know, just all these crazy physical attributes. But his mind was his best weapon. He could read an offense and basically know where it was going to go before the ball was even snapped. So he always was true to himself. He knew what his strengths were, but he definitely worked on his weaknesses as well.
Which is probably why he lasted till the fourth round. Now, he did have a great career at Louisville, and in fact, he is in the Kentucky Sports Hall of Fame for his great play in college. But yeah, he lasted to the fourth round, and probably in today's day and age, who knows where he would have been drafted, because they put so much stock in what happens at the NFL Combine, and he probably would not have had great numbers. But you're totally right. I remember him as a guy who just played with passion, like Coach Mike Ditka used to say. You know, he was a Grabowski. He just went out there and played hard and played smart.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's probably a testament to why he lasted in the league so long. I mean, a lot of these guys who come into the league with all this speed and they're running the 4.240 and they do, you know, 30 some reps on 225, and they're great, and they come out like, you know, they come out like a bat out of hell for the first couple years, and they're great. But eventually those physical skills start to deteriorate and you got to rely on your mind a little bit more. And he had to rely on that from the get-go. And not to say that he wasn't a great athlete, because he was. I didn't realize this until one of our last conversations, where he said that he also played baseball at Louisville and actually tried to play a year of basketball at Louisville, tried to be a three-sport athlete there. And just the basketball thing didn't work out, because he said, he's like, I thought I was a good basketball player. I wasn't anything when I started playing against those guys. So he was multi-talented. He wanted to play baseball. He was getting scouted by some major league teams, but then opted to go the football route. And I think, like I said, he lasted so long because he had to be smart, and he was able to know where the ball was going to be. He was able to read things, and that's why he was able to be in the league for 14 years.
Now, did he share stories about any particular games, plays, players about the Chicago Bears?
He wouldn't always make actual single out any games, because he said, man, that you look, some of these years were quite forgettable. And he said there's a lot of those years, and I feel you look over the years of some of the teams that he was on, and like you kind of alluded to, some of the worst seasons in Bears history. But he does remember saying, I remember I was still going when some guys were taking their foot off the pedal whenever we were, you know, a bad record. I don't know the actual records at the time, but he said whenever it was getting towards the end of the year and some of these guys are looking towards their summer jobs, because a lot of those guys still had summer jobs at that time, because football wasn't an all-year thing. He said these guys are talking about their car dealerships they got to get back to, or they're going back to selling insurance. And he's like, all I want to do is drag one more person into the dirt. So he was zero to 100 the entire year. He was fully focused on it, and football was his life, and that's why, and that bled over into the broadcast career. You saw that whenever he would talk about the Bears, he loved them so much that it literally aggravated him and made him mad and sick to his stomach when he could see that they weren't being as efficient as maybe they could be.
Yeah, well, and it aggravated me that he was never inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I think that because he had the bad luck of playing with some bad Bears team, he never got the credit that he deserved. And also playing alongside of Dick Butkus, who stole the spotlight with, you know, his ferocious play and how he would, you know, those vicious hits and so forth. But it was Doug Buffone and to an extent also Ross Brubaker, the other outside linebacker, who really helped pave the way for Butkus to just roam around the field and do whatever the heck he wanted.
Oh, absolutely. You're preaching to the choir. You look at some of his career stats, and it was really before they kept sack stats. So it was a time where if you could have maybe calculated that, maybe you can make a better case for it. But yeah, you know what? He probably doesn't. He didn't care about that. That wasn't really his thing. He didn't need to be validated by putting on a gold jacket or anything. But you look at the career, you look at the body of work, you look at the longevity, and you look at the overall impact on a team. Whenever you're going through decades of bad teams, and there's still one consistency there, and it's an outside linebacker, and it's Doug Buffone. And you know, perhaps there's a bit of nepotism there because I'm his nephew, or maybe I pay attention to his career more than other people do, but you kind of look over the whole body of work and you say, man, at least get him as a finalist. at least move it forward a little bit, because you got to be able to look at this and say, man, that guy contributed a lot to the game.
He sure did. And you know, I think it was maybe the first game I ever went to was also his last game, and it was the day after Muggs Halas passed away, and it was against the Cardinals. Doug, that last season, he didn't play many games, but when he did play, he always made an impact. In one game, he had a couple of interceptions, and then he was on the special teams, and he ran back. He actually caught a pass, I believe, in one game, and then also ran one back. Now, I've got a clip of that St. Louis Cardinals. And I want to play that to bring back some memories to the old fogies like me and for you, the young bloods. here it goes.
Oh, Parsons going to throw off the punt formation of Buffone. Buffone has the first down. Doug Buffone inside the 30. Dave Steep knocked him out of bounds at the 27-yard line. Well, Parsons and Buffone had a couple of tries at it, and they made it connect on the second one, but it looks like Buffone is hurt, and it looks like also somebody on the sidelines might have been in on that.
Somebody standing on the sidelines. Looks like there might have been a collision there as Steve threw Buffon out of bounds. Doug Buffon in his final game as a Chicago Bear.
Well, the Bears are pulling out all stops. There's Buffon up to the left of your screen. It's just a little screen pass to the blocker, and Buffon cut back here and took it down the field, and let's hope he's not hurt on what could be the last game of his career. Dave Steef makes the tackle, brings him down, and you can't really tell. Only thing it looks like is that he might have hit his head there and he might have had his bell rung. I hope it is only that.
Hope so, too. I thought maybe there was somebody on the sideline involved. The replay indicated otherwise. I think it was simply a Bears trainer who rushed over there immediately to check on Doug Buffon. And now Buffon is up. Doug Buffon is up and seems to be favoring his shoulder perhaps a little bit. And I'm sure he's saying the pain hurts, but it was worth it. Plenty of fun in my final game as a Bear. Big first down. Keeps the Bears' drive alive.
Well, I got chills listening to that. I bet you did too, huh?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I wasn't around for that game, but that's the epitome of him. And I know that last season he would talk about it. He was, from what I understand, he was basically put together with bubblegum and paperclips just trying to go out there, trying to play some ball. Okay. And that was after he had a pretty bad injury the year before, and he tried to make a go of it. I believe it was an Achilles injury. So back then the technology wasn't exactly what it is now, and he had to have a special shoe made to try to make one leg even out with the other one. And he was out there. It was basically playing on all heart, because the body, the heart still is in there, but sometimes the body gives out. And that was that play was all Buffon right there, because he is it's basically just gritting it out, just doing just raw will to try to get the job done.
Now that tape was from CBS, and on the call was Tim Ryan and Johnny Morris, who played with Doug. And Johnny had a long broadcasting career here in Chicago. And, you know, Johnny said he got his bell rung. Well, we know now that that bell rung is really a concussion. And when I saw the tape, Doug's head did hit the turf pretty hard, and that was probably what happened. Did he ever talk to you about those head injuries back in the day? Because we know the unfortunate story of what's happened to many players, and it's incredibly sad. Did he ever mention anything to you about that?
We did have one conversation about it, and he said that he got out relatively lucky, because he said he doesn't think he had a large number of concussions, but he said he you know, the shoulder, the legs, the knees, I mean, those are all going out, but that's to be expected, I guess, after playing 14 years in the NFL. And he said that the one time that we did talk about it, he said, I think I got out relatively unscathed, maybe a couple, one here, one there. But I mean, there's no way of really knowing back in the 70s, certainly in the 60s, 70s, and early 80s. That's not something that was overly diagnosed. And like you heard on the broadcast there, he said he got his bell rung. So that's it's hard to tell. But from him saying it, from what he said, I think he had his bearings about him. That's not to say that something might not have progressed later on in life. But he said, but from what he believed, everything seemed to be going okay as far as the head goes.
Now, John, once Doug retired, you know, he was quite the entrepreneur. He was all over the place. One of the first things I remember, I used to buy the Bear Report, Doug Buffon's Bear Report. It was like a four, maybe five or six page newspaper, and you know, there was an image of Doug, and I would buy it almost every week or whenever it came out. I remember as a kid, and that was his kind of first entree into the world of media. Tell me a little bit about what you know in terms of some of the things that he did post retirement.
Well, he liked to have his hand in a little bit of everything. And even till the later years, I remember I was still in college. I was getting my broadcasting degree, and he came home in the fall, and I was talking to him at our grandpa's house, or my grandpa, his father's house. And we were talking about the radio and things like that. And he's like, you know what I'd really like to do? And he's like, and this is like some foresight for a man who was in his 60s at the time, and saying, you know, the way things are going, people want on-demand radio. radio now, and they're kind of going towards this satellite thing. He's like, I'm trying to put together how I could make this company where it's all on demand radio. And he was thinking outside the box before it was really. I mean, some of that stuff is going mainstream now, but he was talking to me about it, you know, years before it really became popular. And he had the restaurants, he delved into some of the other like you said, the Bears reports and things like that. He always wanted to see how things worked, and he was a great businessman. And I remember my dad telling me he's lucky. He always says this in a joking way. He says Doug was lucky he could play football because he sure as hell couldn't do anything else around our hometown. because that's what his brothers would always rip on him for. That he wasn't exactly mechanically inclined. He had a great business sense. He was a great football player. He was a great radio guy or a media guy in general. Mm-hmm. But you know, they would always rip on him because you know he could barely put gas in his car without something going wrong. And if I can just build on that a little bit, I remember one of the times he wanted to put in his own yard. He wanted to lay the turf down. He wanted to put the sod down for his yard that he had for his house. And he called my dad. He's like, "Well, Denny, what do I have to do?" He's like, "Well, you gotta lay the sod down, and then you gotta grow it, and you gotta throw the seed down, and then you gotta fertilize it." Well, he thought he did that. He put down the seeds, he you know, tilled the land, he put on some fertilizer, and he didn't understand why the grass wasn't growing in a couple days. He didn't understand why the sod wasn't coming up. And he calls again, he's like, "The grass isn't growing." And my dad's like, You gotta be patient. It's gonna come up. Well, my uncle, not being the most patient person in the world, decided, well, if I just put more fertilizer on it, then it's gonna grow even faster. So this is a guy who goes out, buys a ton more fertilizer, puts it all over his yard, and literally that fertilizer just burned everything. So there wasn't anything growing on it. So he's got this barren wasteland for a yard, and he's like, "You know what? I don't know what I was doing." He went up and called a landscaping company. They came out and rolled the sod out for him. He never tried to landscape ever again. That's the interesting dynamic, because he was totally built for the life that he had, which was so not the life of our little hometown, which is very manufacturing based, very hands-on based, very much, you know, kind of get in there and, you know, do it yourself kind of thing. And he was much more of the I'm looking at a bigger picture kind of enterprising kind of thing, entrepreneurial thing. So it was really really interesting the way that whenever he'd come home, they would still just rip on him because he couldn't do the same kind of things that they were doing, even though he would come home to hunt. He would still be the butt of the jokes a lot of the time.
He is just so fascinating. So many things happened in his life. I mean, we could talk for days about, you know, stories about Doug, his personality, his exploits on the football field. Let me ask you this. Did you know him to have a temper?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that runs in the family. That goes back to our great-grandpa, or my great-grandpa, his grandfather, who came over from Italy. I mean, that's just in the DNA. That's basically be very jolly, be very happy, be very caring. But man, if you tick me off, I'm gonna wring your neck. And he would sometimes, and that goes for all the Buffon men, basically, from my father to Uncle Doug to all my other uncles and my grandpa especially. They'd kind of work themselves up into a lather. Something would irritate them, and then they'd keep talking about it, and then they start talking about it louder, and then they start talking about it a little bit louder with the arms shaking a little bit, and all of a sudden their hands are clenched in fists. Before you know it, all of a sudden there's steam coming out of your ears, and you can see lava in your eyes. So it's one of those things where you could see why he was such a good football player, because he there's just so much passion and sometimes just unadulterated anger, is what he would call it, the Neanderthal gene, where you just go out, see, seek, and destroy.
That's funny. Well, and it leads me into this clip that I found. When Doug passed, WSCR Radio did a number of tributes, and I found one on YouTube that somebody recorded and then pasted onto YouTube. And I want to play this because it is an example of that temper that Doug had. Apparently, Dan Bernstein, one of the guys that currently works. Has worked at the Score for years, and people in Chicago know him. He's sort of the modern day Howard Cosell. You kind of love him, or you hate him, or you love to hate him. And he was making fun of Doug, and Mike Mulligan, who also works at the Score, recalls this story. So this is right off the air. There's some music mixed in, so let's take a listen to it and have a good laugh.
Somebody has to tell the story with Bernstein. With Doug, we're doing crosstalk. And Bernstein was really kind of tearing into Doug a little bit. In a playful way, but an annoying way. And Doug was not having it.
You moron!
And so Doug turns to him. He takes one of those fingers of his, and he points at Bernstein, and he says to him,
"Are you Pacho?
I'm not messing around anymore. Knock it off." First, he was kind of saying stuff about Doug having brain damage or post-concussional syndrome, and Doug wasn't bright.
He points
at Bernstein. He says, "Hey, knock it off. I will get up and come over there." And Bernstein says,
"That's okay. By the time you get over here, you'll forget why you came."
Doug hops up. I'm telling you, it was like watching like a giant cat. The guy moved like you wouldn't believe. He jumps up. He runs over there. He gets the guy in a chokehold.
Try this.
Bernstein, to his credit, just goes rubber. Kind of drops his hands and just lets himself kind of go rubber. I'm standing there horrified because I'm watching a homicide. And I'm yelling at Doug. I'm yelling, "He's turning purple!
Let go of my testicles!
You gotta let him go!" And Doug just drops him. And Doug walks out. He's like twitching in the hallway.
"I've had it. I have had it."
You know, every muscle, the blood is running through him. And he says,
"I didn't play piano for a living."
As much as I love Doug and respect Doug, I have been afraid of him ever since that moment. Because it was like, I just looked at him and I'm like, that guy could kick my ass. You know how there's always someone tougher? There's always someone Dugger.
I just love that. That is, I think I'm going to play that like every night, you know, just to have a good laugh.
Oh man, that's exactly who he was. He could be as self-deprecating as the next person. He took shots at himself in a playful manner, and he loved to joke around. He didn't take things too seriously unless he thought you were being kind of rude or you were being mean-spirited. Mm-hmm. If he thought that maybe you were poking fun at him just because you wanted to be mean to him, then all of a sudden, you see that big cat kind of come out, and you see those big banana hands come at you, and that's not something that you want to deal with. Like I said, he didn't take himself too seriously, but he didn't like to be made fun of. He certainly didn't like to be called stupid, and because he wasn't. He's very, very intelligent, right. And that's something that you got to battle whenever you're 6'3", 250, or whatever it was, mm-hmm. playing weight was. I mean, people sometimes just assume you're a meathead, but right. I think that he took it very seriously, that he wanted to show people he was intelligent, so if you tried to downgrade that or kind of, you know, take shots at him, he's gonna defend himself in a grizzly bear type manner.
Yeah, and Bernstein can be a bit on the annoying side, and I think I'm being kind when I say that. Anything else you want to share about Doug Buffone, your uncle?
Well, I want to say that, you know, people always say the first thing whenever he passed away, I got a ton of people giving me condolences, and it wasn't because they didn't reach out to me to say, "Wow, he was a great football player." That was a very, very small amount of people. But a lot of people I didn't even know were sending me condolences through, whether it's social media or in person or text messages, things like that. And none of them really said, "Man, he was a great football player." They say, "Hey, he was a really, really great guy." Every time I met him once or I met him twice, and he was the nicest down-to-earth guy I ever met. Or he took time to talk to us whenever we waited in line to talk to him. Or he signed an autograph whenever he was on his way to somewhere, and you could tell he was in a hurry, but he stopped. He had a couple words with you. He took a picture with you, and he treated you like you were a buddy or you were a friend. So that's the thing that I take the most pride in. And the fact that he put our little town on the map, and basically, I know a lot of media people get mad when either media people or fans say "we" when they associate with a team. Like, "Hey, we just signed this," or "We just signed Trubisky. We drafted Trubisky," or "We just traded for this," or "I can't believe we lost that game." You know, a lot of the media snobs will say, "Well, you can't say we. Are you associated with them? Do you play for them? Are you the owner?" And I will always say "we" when it's with the Chicago Bears because of the Chicago Bears. My grandparents, who once again had 7 kids, were able to live above the poverty line in a very small town. Because of the Chicago Bears, I'm able to take a lot more pride in my little town that was, you know, hasn't had a lot of manufacturing in it for a long time. So because of the Bears, my family has been better, my pride has been elevated, and because of my uncle being able to play for the Bears, has given me an opportunity to become a better broadcaster, to learn from someone who was at the highest level. Not a lot of not a lot of kids out of college get the opportunity to learn from somebody who is doing the Bears post-game show or has the opportunity to learn from somebody who contributes to, you know, NFL films and things like that. So because of the Bears and my uncle, I've become a better professional, and I've actually become a better person because he did it with such – he didn't tell anyone about it. He did it because he genuinely wanted to do something good. He genuinely cared about my career, genuinely cared about me, and that to me just basically puts his entire puts him in a nutshell. That's who he was. He just genuinely nice guy who happened to play football.
Very well said, John. And I got to ask you this. I know you're in the heart of Steelers country, so are you a Bears fan or a Steelers fan?
Oh, man, 100% Bear down. That has been me for my whole life. I grew up because I was so enamored by the fact that I had an uncle who played for the Bears, and even though we didn't get a lot of Bears games out in near Pittsburgh, I was always excited when they were on TV. And then whenever I had the opportunity to watch them, and the fact that I could be different, because this is Steeler country, and a lot of Bears fans. I always say, you don't know what it's like to be miserable until you're a Bears fan. So all these Steeler fans are like, oh, we suck. Oh, my God, we're going to barely make the playoffs, or we might only win the division, or we might only be the 2 seed this year. I'm like, hey, man, why don't you have Rex Grossman or Jay Cutler as your quarterback? And then you can talk about me about how miserable you are. So I wear that Bears fan as a badge of honor, because I'm in the middle of I was in the middle of the NFL elite as far as fans go, as far as high expectations, and I was always the one saying, hey, you don't know what it's like, and that's what's going to make a Bears Super Bowl eventually, whether it's 5, 10, 15, 50 years from now. That's
no,
what's gonna
not 50, please, no, not 50.
I know, but that's what's going to make it all the sweeter, because you put up with all this, and you hope that things are going in the right direction, and you hope, and that's what it is. That Bears fans are based on hope right now. That's the way that we're going. We're based on hope. Whether it's probably not going to be 2017, 2018, might have a little bit of a crease, a little sunlight there. But it's all built on hope now, and that was a big reason maybe why they went and got the quarterback.
One of my favorite quotes is from the movie Shawshank Redemption, and the quote is, hope is a good thing, and all good things never die. And so that's how it is for me every season. Despite what the roster might look like, I have a lot of hope. Tell me a little bit about what your thoughts are about Trubisky and this Chicago Bears team as it shapes up for 2017.
Well, I mean, like most people, I was a little shocked by the Trubisky pick. I was in the newsroom getting ready to go on the air, and I was watching. I was actually like holding off on going out to the studio because I was watching the TV. And everybody knows that I was a Bears fan, so they're like, "Hey, what's going on?" And I'm watching them. They say Mitchell Trubisky, and everyone's just like, "No, no, no!" And they're just making fun of me because clearly that's my fault that they picked Trubisky.
Is that right?
And it took me about a day to really comprehend or try to understand or try to put a good, a positive spin on it. They didn't give up as much as a lot of people say they do if you compare it to previous years. I know they only moved up one spot. Yeah, they probably could have got him at number 3, but we don't know that. And, at least it's there. Maybe they're looking for one of those San Diego Chargers situation where they had Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers, and they have their pick of it. Maybe you can't have enough quarterbacks if you think they're talented. So once again, I'm trying to be positive here. And maybe Glennon goes off. He has a pretty good year. Maybe Trubisky in the background starts, progressing well. Maybe they flip Glennon for a second or third round pick to somebody who has an emergency next year, or maybe he's your guy for 2 years and you bring him, you have an Aaron Rodgers situation or something like that. I know there's a lot of holes that has to fill. I know people were looking at the safety position. I know a lot of people think, well, who the hell is he going to throw the ball to? Kevin White for maybe 1.5 games, and then whatever's left of, Kendall Wright and Marcus Wheaton. So I know there's a lot of question marks, but at least there is hope to think, hey, we got a young kid who might, now there's, when I say might, I mean 40%, 35% might be your guy for the next 10 years. And at least that's something to look forward to. At least it's not like last year where you didn't have anything coming up and all of a sudden they suck and there's nothing to even look forward to. There's not even anything, you can't even say, hey, put the young kid in, let's see what they have. Who was their young kid last year? Matt Barkley. Matt Barkley, you're looking for something. So I think at least this year, there's at least positive to say, hey, we get a look at what the future might look like a couple years down the road.
Yeah, I'm pretty much on board with how you feel about things. And the one thing that is encouraging, and I've gone back and looked at more tape of him at college and the reports from rookie camp, is this guy is accurate. He is very accurate with the pass. And having suffered through quarterbacks who were – oh my goodness,
you can say it, it's
all right. Yeah. Well, I'll use an Ed Obradovich quote, who after a Ed Obradovich said Cutler couldn't hit a mule's ass with a banjo today.
Yeah, pull in the ass with a banjo, one of my favorites.
Yes. So you know, we've suffered through Cade McNown and a bunch of just quarterbacks who were just could not throw the ball accurately. Well, this kid, Trubisky, doesn't have that problem. And so that, to me, is a great sign. What do you think about this team? Can they be 500 in 2017?
I mean, there's a lot of factors. Who can stay healthy? Can Kevin White be healthy? Is Jordan mm-hmm. Howard going to hit a sophomore slump? I think everyone's saying, well, they're gonna have to throw this kid in, you know, week five, whenever the fans are clamoring for him to throw him in. Right. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think a lot of the Bears fans are saying, hey, I don't think we're doing much in 2017. And I think a lot of Bears fans are finally wised up, or a lot of them think, listen, we haven't had a real, honest, reliable quarterback for a long time. Why would we risk this? We got this commodity that we think might be the answer. Let's not throw him in because maybe we want to go 7-9. So I think they're going to let Glennon play out, and Glennon's a serviceable quarterback. He had some good games in Tampa Bay. And then once again, they go out and get Jameis Winston, kind of exactly what the Bears just did by going out and get Trubisky. So I mean, I can understand some anger out of Glennon, but he's getting paid a guaranteed like $18.5 million. So I can't feel too bad for
exactly.
him. But I mean, I think that if they could throw, the defense looked like it was making strides last year, and I think if they can keep games close. And it's going to come down to turnovers, and I know that's cliche, and I know that that's an easy out. But honestly, that's what it's going to come down to. If they can take care of the ball, I think the defense is going to make some plays this year. Whether or not some of those cornerback signings pan out, that'll be determined. But I honestly think they have to be better than last year. But I think they will flirt with 500. But I honestly think that they're going to be right around the 7-9 record era. And 8-8 is fine. But there's not a real big difference between 7-9 and 8-8. You're still going to be in the middle of the pack draft the next year. But I think this could be a 7-9, 8-8 ball team this year.
Yeah, I could see that happening. I just hope that, you know, those days when Doug was throwing rants because the Packers put up double nickels on us and the Patriots did it the week prior or the week after, whatever it was. I hope it's behind us.
Last year with one of the worst records in Bears history, man, that would have been some golden radio. I remember watching each and every Bears game saying, man, do I wish Uncle Doug was around, or man, I wish I could give him a call, because whenever I would give him a call to say, hey, this is the rundown for my show, he would come on my show every week. I'm like, hey, this is what I want to talk about. And we'd talk for like 5 minutes about the rundown. And he's like, did you watch that GD Bears game last week? I'm like, yeah, I sure did. And he would go on the same kind of route or the same kind of rant that he would on the radio just to me on the telephone. So that wasn't planned. That wasn't staged. That wasn't an act. That was him.
Well, I'll tell you, John Buffone, you have clearly inherited several of Doug's traits. You're a super nice guy. You're a great communicator, and I can tell from your voice that you're also very passionate, just like your uncle was. I really want to thank you for being on Bears Barroom Radio. Hey, how can people get a hold of you if they want to drop you a note or follow you on Twitter?
Sure, you can follow me on Twitter at JD Buffone. Yes, the D does stand for Doug. That's kind of a family name. So JD Buffone on Twitter is where you guys can find me.
And Doug Buffone's middle name was John, correct?
Yeah, it's kind of funny how we just kind of introvert. Everybody in the family has a son named after them. So my older brother, my dad's name is Dennis, so I have an older brother, Dennis. Uncle Doug had a junior. And it was Uncle Joe has Little Joe. And then after that, we just kind of introvert everybody else's names. So we all have the same names in one way or another.
Family events at the Buffones must be a treat. It must be a lot of fun.
Yeah, try to get a word in. It's darn near impossible. Everyone is screaming, and everyone is having seven different conversations at the same time. If you want to come out of a room dizzy, that's the place to go.
There you go. John Buffon, thanks very much for being on Bears Barroom Radio. Okay, some quick stuff before I hit a real bar. The Bears announced the signing of Adam Shaheen to a 4-year deal. You should know the story already. This guy was the surprise second-round pick. He comes from little-known Ashland University. He was nicknamed Baby Gronk, scored a Division II record 16 touchdowns last year, and Ryan Pace says Shaheen is expected to contribute right away. Now, there are currently 7 tight ends under contract for the Bears, and this is how Pace assessed the tight end position after selecting Shaheen in the draft.
I like the group as a whole because there's a good mix of talent. You know, Deion Sims was an interesting guy that we added, and he's more of the Y. You know, Zach's been here for a while, a lot of experience, he's more of the F. And then we have a really intriguing room behind that with a lot of younger guys that I think have a lot of upside behind them. So all of a sudden the tight end room has become, I think, an area of strength for us, you know, and with a lot of variety in that room and a lot of younger guys too with upside.
So now 4 of the 5 Bears picks are under contract. Mitch Trubisky is still not signed. He'll get something like a 4-year deal for about $30 million. And I bet what they're still trying to hammer out is that 5th-year option and what that will look like. I'm taping this show on Sunday afternoon, so by the time you hear this, that deal might be settled. I'm sure everyone, both sides, want to agree on this before Tuesday's OTAs, where the rookies finally get to practice alongside the veterans. All eyes will be on Mike Glennon, the starting quarterback for the 2017 Chicago Bears. The team has made it clear that Glennon is the guy for 2017. Now, the Ryan Pace Bears haven't always been totally honest with us, but it does look like they believe that Glennon has all the tools to step into the starter's role and play well. This was Dow Loggins on Glennon just this last week.
I liked him in college, and then he had NFL tape, so you got to watch and you get to see, like, hey, this guy is a starting quarterback in the NFL, and I think that his ability to handle a lot of different things, he's extremely intelligent. His size helps him a lot because he can see everything. You know, he's really good in three-step. He can play under center. He can run all the play-action passes stuff. He's, for a guy that's as long as he is, his movement skills are sneaky. He can do all the nakins and do those different things. So you're not limited offensively what you can do.
Okay, we will be watching with beer in hand and reporting on the Mike Glennon situation. He's scheduled to talk to the media on Tuesday. So follow us on Twitter at Bears Barroom or find us on our Facebook page and we can talk about what Glennon says or doesn't say. Should be interesting. You know, this could turn out to be a big, gigantic soap opera between the Glennon and Trubisky this year. And maybe not, but I kind of hope it will be. It's fun. Anyway, fun is what I had today, talking to John Buffon. Again, you can find him on Twitter at JD Buffon. And thanks to WSCR Radio and CBS for the sound clips. I will leave you with the music that started the show, Ryan Rebick's remix of Starley's Call on Me. And I've mixed in some classic Doug Buffonisms from the soundboard that you can find over at WSCR's website. They've got a cool soundboard of Doug Buffon sayings. So that will be mixed in to the music. And remember, if you drink, please don't drive. And always, bear down.
All right, we're going to the Black Pantologist is on here.
What is it now?
Pantologist.
No, it's a physicist.
Oh, it's a physicist. I'm sorry. I thought it was the black psychotic. No. What? What do you want? Let's go out to Black Psychic in Avalon Park. Black.
Hello, gentlemen.
What's up? That's physicist. I'm sorry. Go out to Black Pharmacist. Black Pharmacist, you're on the score.
It's Black Physicist, Doug. Hi. Oh,
what? Did I change it again? Every time you call, I change you. You're a physicist. You're a pharmacist. Come on.
I don't give a damn.
You should give a damn because that's the difference in the football game.
I do.
Game.
That's what I'm pointing out. 459 yards.
You
can't. Who the hell do you think gave that up?
Let me ask
the Green Bay Packers right
there. You think because they gave up 459 yards? hard-fought game.